Scotland Life, brought to you by Isle of Man Creameries for fresh milk and award-winning cheeses.
Hello, on Time to Remember today, we meet a distinguished Manx advocate, a former president of the Isle of Man Law Society and for many years chairman of Manx National Heritage Trustees. He qualified as a barrister in the UK in 1960 and was admitted to the Manx Bar in 1962, later joining Dickinson Cruikshank, where he became senior partner. He's Martin Moore. To give him his full name, George Ramsay Martin Moore, following both his grandfather and father into the legal profession. His grandfather being Ramsay Moore, his father George Moore, and named Martin seems to be just to avoid confusion.
Yes, Martin was not a family name, but it distinguished me from the other two. In the family, I would answer, those who knew my father and grandmother, I would answer to any name. They would get great confusion.
Do you remember anything much of your grandfather?
Oh, very much indeed. Grandfather qualified as an advocate just before Dumble's bank crashed in 1900. He'd been articled to G.A. Ring, who'd been Attorney General. He then continued in practice as Ring and Moore, with Ring being the attorney, until 21, when he was the first full-time Attorney General appointed.
What was your relationship like with your grandfather?
Oh, very close. He was interested in many things. Farming, he had two family farms when I was young, and that's why I used to go and spend some holidays very happily in the Lozère and later in Bride with the Teare family. Wonderful experience. You learned an awful lot of Manx and didn't know. You were learning Manx with field names and the equipment. Grandfather was also very interested in history. He was, as I think you're probably aware, chairman of the Manx Museum and National Trust. A long-serving trustee. He was involved with the Isle of Man Antiquarian Society, and I used to go on holidays with him. He would go around the Isle of Man and point out. He knew every farm, and he knew virtually every tenant.
Really?
And he would explain the history of the place. He was very widely read.
Do you remember your first visit to the Carver Man, for instance? Would he have taken you there, do you think?
He did not. I think that my first visit would be in the 50s.
Oh, yes.
But I went with him to Ireland with the Antiquarian Society, in a joint party with the Hibernian Antiquarians, and it was monumental because it was led by a leading Irish harpist who came from the north called Richard Hayward, who ignored the border. And we went south to Omagh and... west to Omagh and also down to Kilkenny in an Ulster bus. And it was the first time ever that, with the red hand on it, front, back and side, that we were actually taken to... it had gone over the border into the Republic.
Right.
We were stoned in Carlow.
This must have been a very important part of your education, really, this association with your grandfather, I suppose.
Yes, he was very interested. He'd have been a very good teacher. After he retired as Attorney General, he should have retired on age grounds during the war, but of course stayed on till the end of the war. And Howard Simcox came back, and Howard had been articled as an accountant, but of course, having lost his sight on military service, he decided to become a lawyer. And he was at Kellymore and Kelly, which was my father's firm, and grandfather tutored him, and they recruited Helen Convig, who was Howard's mentor, secretary, for the whole of his career.
Right.
Wonderful. Yeah. My grandfather was interested in teaching as well, and lectured and wrote a lot of articles from the Druids to Manx Curiosities, which are a series of articles which he wrote before the war, snippets of the then oddities of Manx law.
Right. Now, coming to your father then, George Moore, he had a significant role to play in our more contemporary lives, of course, but again, did you have a very good relationship with your father?
Excellent relationship with the father. Of course, he volunteered for the Royal Air Force at the start of the Second World War. He'd qualified in the 30s and then had joined up with Henry Kelly. The firm had been Kelly and Kelly. That was High Bailiff Kelly and Henry Kelly. And of course, Henry became my principal when I was father by when I came back in 59. Father by then was Attorney General.
Now, you'd be, I think, about seven or so when the war ended, but do you have any memories of the Second World War here on the island?
I have vivid memories. They're partial, obviously. The earliest memory is the bombing attack on Ballymena Hospital, which put a stick of bombs from Sir George's Bridge to the far end of Balnard Road. It did some damage. Memories of that. But memories of, because we lived in Balnard Road, which was then out in the country. We weren't in the borough of Douglas at that stage. And the memories of the squads of German prisoners of war under military escort of one old soldier carrying a First World War 303 rifle, going out to the farms at the end of a harvest day, coming back, and I have this memory of a German carrying the gun because it was too heavy for the old soldier. But they were good times, and the people they farmed well. The only problems that they had that I'm aware of, which upset my grandfather a great deal because it was food for the nation, and of course the population virtually doubled, and we fed them all. There was one house which was for the Nazi sympathisers, and some of them were quite fearsome, apparently. And at the bottom of Ingerbeck, by the reservoir, by the dam head, on the mountainside above it, they decided to get these people to plant potatoes. And grandfather's, one of his great upsets was that they sabotaged the crop by knocking all the eyes off the spuds.
Oh, no.
But then, of course, I go on to my experience. I mean, I was very familiar with half Douglas Promenade being used for military encampments and training centres. Yeah. A lot of troops and military about on the island.
Yes.
And then the Victory in Europe parade. I was, for some reason, we were all invited down, and we were in the Sefton watching the parade go by. Wonderful.
Tell us a bit more about that. What was it, in fact, that Victory parade?
Well, it was contingents of all the troops.
Oh.
And there was a flypast from Rummelsway with the Polish and Czech squadrons. And it was strange, later on, my father had that actually, after he left the Isle of Man, because he came back during the war as the stationed at Jerby as the opening officer of RAF Andreas.
Oh, really?
And, of course, the recent excellent military history, which has just been published, gives a lot of the background.
Yeah. When you move on then to towards teenage years, what sort of activities attracted you in those times then?
Well, I was at Murray's Road very happy years. Manx education was great, and you were into everything. So there was inevitably music. I don't think I was into the Manx dancing, although I think Mother used to try and get me to the piano.
Yeah.
Yes, I did a little bit of piano. Singing, we were... There's a family, Rosemount Methodist Church.
And Manx Music Festival, no?
Very rarely.
Yeah.
Manx Music Festival, when I came back to the island, having become a member of the English Bar, the time then the population was about 48,000. And the winter activities were great. There was badminton, which I played. Father was non-playing island captain. I sang with the Gelling tribe, the great singers, Wally Kirby, and
oh, right, yeah.
I mean, wonderful times.
Yeah.
Londo, the Operatic Society. There was lots going on. Everything ceased during the summer because so many people were involved in tourism.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there was an organisation called Sozziums, which had been set up.
Called what?
Sozziums. Serving officers and students of the Isle of Man.
Yeah.
It was all male.
Yeah.
But that for people who were like me, receiving their further education offhand, every holiday, there was always something going on.
Mm.
Mixed hockey, very dangerous. Cricket.
You did a bit of cycling as well.
Oh, I cycled, yes. The bicycle was wonderful. I mean, I think I cycled all over the island. There was much less traffic.
Well, with 48,000, yes. And you could almost count about 30 cars on a Sunday afternoon, I remember, going
Absolutely.
Through Union Mill. So it was amazing, really.
I mean, it was so quiet. I mean, our old pet Labrador would lie in the middle of the road.
Yeah,
and watch
you play football in the middle of the road.
We did.
Yes.
And then, I mean, they used to the steam traction engines used to come and take up water at the dip at Balnard Road.
Yeah.
And they blocked the road with all their gear for half an hour. Nobody bothers.
Yeah.
I mean, Williston was just being started in 1948 by Douglas Corporation. They'd bought that estate, and the traffic then increased.
Yeah, of course. Just after the end of the war, there was a royal visit, wasn't there? The King and Queen came here. Do you remember anything of that?
I remember that. We knew the Pooley family, who were Earl Granville and Lady Granville's grandchildren. and we used to be invited up to Government House when they came. And of course, it was just before the end of the war, I think, the visit.
Was it, right? Yeah, it was 45.
The general feeling was, I think, the King had had a very, very difficult and very strenuous war. Mm. And what better to come to the Isle of Man and have a recuperation with his aunt, Lady Granville.
Yeah. So then it was on, as you say, to Murray's Road School. What happened to your education after that?
Well, I was sent to a prep school on the Wirral on the introduction of the Reverend C. James, who'd been a Methodist minister in Mells on the Wirral. He said, good school, sound basis. And I was there for 2 years. I then followed my father to Rydal, which is a Methodist school in Colwyn Bay. Mm. That had been revived after the First World War by the Reverend A.J. Costain, the brother of Sir Richard Costain, the Liverpool builder. They were actually a Liverpool family, but they were Colby and very proud of their Manxness. Mm. And I was there for 5 years until I went to King's College in London.
Yes. And it was from, well, presumably, at some early age, you were destined to go into law anyway, were you? Did you have to make a decision about it, or was it inevitable, I mean?
No, it was not inevitable. Father and Arthur Kane, William Kane's father, they were obviously discussing careers and the rest. And at that, in the period of 59, you know, where was the Isle of Man going to go? Were there going to be jobs? The population had declined from the war. It was really hard times. Mm. And both of them decided that we should go and follow our further education in the UK. Both did degrees in the UK, and both went to Gray's Inn. It's very strange. Virtually all the Manx advocates over time who have been involved in English training have been members of Gray's Inn.
Right.
I actually did family history research. That was one of the things I used to do as a student here. You could do searches in the registry for nothing if it was historical. And I found that Robert Moore from Balacowl in Bride in 1670 was a member of the English bar at Gray's Inn. But grandfather was the first. Mm. And they were keen I would try. But the English qualification was acceptable across the world.
Yes.
And I therefore kept the options open. I was very pleased to come back. The island, under Sir Ronald Garvey's governorship, was changed out of all recognition.
But had you any other ideas that you would rather pursue something other than law?
Oh, I
to
was,
break this family tradition.
I was always interested in geography and geology. My A-levels were more to that end of the...
Right, right.
And I was interested, always interested in history.
Yes.
I could have read history or geography. Mm. At King's College in London, one could go to all the lectures. And I went to geography lectures.
Yeah.
L. Dudley Stamp, who wrote most of the student books in those days, was the professor, and he said, do you really want to go and knock rocks in Saudi Arabia? The Isle of Man's a very nice place. And, you know, I was. It was pushing an open door.
Yes.
And I had the fortunate position that to go into Kellymore and Kelly, which was then Kellymore Hanson and Luft, part of the terms that Father had with Henry Kelly was that I had not to pay a premium. So I came back as the last of the unpaid law students.
Oh.
Totally unpaid.
Really?
But I didn't pay a premium.
No.
Often parents
would that premium have been then quite a substantial amount?
That was a substantial... It was not unusual to be £500.
Right.
And you've got to remember that £500 was a lot of money. If you look in 1961, the governor's salary was, I think, £3,000, the Deemster, £2,500, second Deemster, £2,350, the Attorney General the same.
Yeah.
£500 was a lot of money.
It certainly was.
But it was compensation to the principal to educate you for basically 5 years. I was actually exempt because I was an English barrister for 2 years. I was there for 2 years articles.
Yes.
But for 2 years I was the last of the unpaid law students.
So you admitted the Manx Bar in 62, was it?
Was it 1962 in April. April the 4th, yes.
All right.
The 5th anniversary.
Okay, so were you starting then right at the bottom to work your way up?
Well, I think a lot of my father's former clients expect, and I think the public thought I would walk into my father's office and stay there where I'd been a student. But being an independent soul, I wanted to make my own way in the profession.
Mm.
And what better to join up with Eric Farger and Jack Curran here in Dickinson's in Douglas.
Yeah.
Eric had been a student of my grandfather's at the end of the First World War. People came back and they had foreshortened articles too.
Mm.
And grandfather was quite surprised because he and Eric were too alike and right. they fought exceedingly well together.
Yes.
But I had a great partnership with Jack and, yeah. and Eric.
Can you recall the first work that you had to do then?
The first work in the we were general practitioners.
Yes.
I'd actually, as a student, sat in the Attorney General's office and father was wanting to show me things. And the first unpaid job was to draft for him memorandum and articles, the rules and regulations to set up Radio Manx Limited.
Really?
Yes. I had to go and look and see what they were doing in the UK. And in fact, you probably see in the, it could do television as well.
Yeah, but I mean, there wasn't much to go on then because there was only the BBC and Radio Luxembourg. There was no such thing as a commercial radio station in the UK.
It was quite hard to pull it together, but it stood, I'm glad to say, it stood the test of time. Because,
there,
of course, Mr. Mayer had his own, the running Manx Radio at that stage, had his own company.
Yeah.
But government had this company in waiting.
Mm.
And as history shows, they took over the Mayer operation.
Right. So when you say you're a general practitioner, anything that came along, they'd put it on your deus desk, would they?
Well, you see, there were 28 advocates on the list when I came back.
28 in the island, that was?
Yes, yeah. Of whom 23 were actually in practice.
Right.
The others were in official positions or had retired.
Oh, yeah.
So very small. You could go into court in the morning and do the odd debt suit, and then you would, because debtors, they got in the newspapers on the first day.
Right.
You could do divorce. The afternoon, you might find yourself dealing with an admiralty dispute. You could be doing leases, vast amount. But in Dickinson's, unlike all the other advocates' firms, it never changed its name. And that goodwill meant that there were a lot of links with people who knew of the firm, people who'd emigrated in the period, in the earlier parts of the 1900s. And we did a lot of work internationally with the major London firms of solicitors.
Mm-hmm.
It was so... it was so busy with the offshore work that we could actually have shut the door and said, we're not going to do any work local.
Right.
It wasn't the case. We were pleased to take all the work on.
Yeah.
And we were also very busy with local authority work.
Authority work?
Dickinson's had been the advocates of Douglas Town Commissioners before they became Douglas Corporation.
Yeah.
Ramsey, Castletown, Kirkmichael and Laxey.
Yes.
And there was always work going on down there.
Right. And the stacks of wills, I suppose, as well.
A lot of wills, yes. Yeah. The Manx are very good at making wills because the law used to guess, you see, the eldest son, if there was no will, inherited the land.
Mm, right.
And land didn't change very often. When I came back, I think it was reckoned that houses changed hands about once every 30 years.
Really?
But farms, about once in 200 years.
Is that so?
Absolutely.
Extraordinary, that. When you first came back, you wouldn't see a woman in these offices at all, would you? You'd hardly see a woman on a jury, would you?
When we came back, there were no Manx advocates until... Lady Manx advocates until Claire Folds was admitted.
Mm-hmm.
The whole court system didn't facilitate ladies.
Why not?
The juries, they hadn't got the toilet facilities for them, or the changing rooms, because you have to have a robing room.
Yeah, right.
And it was only when Claire was appointed and they changed the Jury Act that they made alterations to the old courthouse here in Athol Street.
But you also mentioned Ronald Garvey earlier. Now, was that an important period for you and for the island?
I think that the island owes a great debt to the foresight of Sir Ronald Garvey in his period as Lieutenant Governor. He had, in his previous governorships, assisted other territories very materially in their development. And he was prepared to see a development which had been foreseen by the Action Group. And the Action Group was Sir John Bolton and Clifford Irving. And my father was involved with them. And they were regular meetings, and they were moving forward. In 1959... The Parliament of Westminster had passed the Isle of Man Act, which in many ways had reversed the takeover of the customs and excise by the British in 1765 at the revestment. And there was a mood to move the island forward. Sir Ronald had ideas to deal with the post office, the note issue. The other banks had all issued that, and very profitable it was. Telecommunications, they were offered, and initially thought that there were too many miles of overhead lines for a population, very expensive. But everything he did was to encourage the independence of the island and reducing his power, but for the economy of the island. The only thing he failed was the oil refinery on the Ayres.
Oh, yeah, well, that was very controversial. Did you have any involvement in that? Oh,
inevitably, yes. Yes, I had an involvement with a company which was looking at the oil refinery.
Right. Isn't that one where the government was supposedly organising this all behind closed doors and not letting the public know about it? They're going to spring it on them or some such, was it?
I think there was commercial confidentiality as well.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole idea was to put the berthing platform out towards the Bahama Bank in Ramsey Bay and have the refinery somewhere down in the northern area. I don't think it was a starter.
No.
But the development which led to the finance board being set up and then the treasury, he was the catalyst that brought about the reduction in the governor's power. I was very fortunate. As a young advocate, I used to not go home at lunchtime. I would lunch at the Ellen Vanden Club, which was in Finch Road. And there was the opportunity, because when Tindall was sitting and the Keys were sitting, the members would come in for lunch. And they would bounce ideas off. What do you think of this? And it was very educational.
Yeah, yeah.
But at that stage, the governor, he was the chancellor.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And nothing really happened without his signature on it.
Yeah, because during that time, the abolition of surtax arrived, didn't it?
Absolutely.
And from then on, really, that was the start, wasn't it, of the finance sector in its very basic form.
It is. The finance sector, the island had been used for tax planning purposes for a lot longer than people expected to or remember.
The SIB was a glitch in this, but in the long term, it hasn't really made much difference, has it?
It was... SIB was...
I mean, a lot of people would say it was a lot more than a glitch, of course.
Yes, it was... It should not have happened. It was potentially totally avoidable. The Isle of Man passed a very well-drafted Banking Act. And, unfortunately, they did not provide the manpower, adequate or experienced enough, to monitor it. And that was the sole cause. A competent financial supervisor, using our legislation, it wouldn't have happened.
Right.
It was very sad.
Were you involved in the negotiations when we got the Calf of Man back to Banks National Heritage?
Yes, and I dealt with Dame Jenkins, who was the chairman of the National Trust, and with the Secretariat, and we said, look, can we come to some arrangement where the Calf will come to the Isle of Man? And they said, there was lengthy discussion with their lawyers, and I did the negotiations. We were able to agree that provided Tynwald passed the amending legislation to enable land to be declared inalienable, and the first one to be the Calf, they would transfer it. So we had a ceremony down at the Sound, and we gave them a Manx gold £5 coin as a token.
That was all, just five.
That was it. And we I mean, it was basically no change, but a wonderful acquisition. And, you know, people since have been so generous in supporting not only what we do at the Calf, but what we do on the various museum sites and National Trust, Manx National Trust properties.
Well, there we heard from Martin Moore, and Martin sharing some of his memories. He was born in 1938, the year that Harry Kelly's cottage was opened to the public for the first time, and the year in which the Laxey builder Edwin Neal took a 15-year lease on the Laxey wheel. From next week, Time to Remember will be at the new time of 6 p.m. on Wednesdays, but with no repeat. And for the remainder of the series, in recognition of the centenary of the TT, we'll hear from some of the people closely associated with our famous racing event.